The Book Nook on WYSO was presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'm joined on the telephone by Marco Zuppas, and he's in Rome, Italy, where I would like to be right now. How's the weather there, Marco?
Well, right now, hello to everyone and to you. Right now, it's raining, actually, so it's not usual Roman weather, and there was a storm with thunder and lightning just before, so I hope it doesn't continue.
Well, you've got a new book out, and you're actually going to be coming to our area to talk about it. What the heck is a Dylanologist?
A Dylanologist is an expert on Bob Dylan, someone who knows possibly all the ins and outs of his lyrics and music. The term doesn't have a very dignified origin, because it comes from a guy called A.J. Weberman, who before invented the term garbology, because he was looking through the garbage of the Bob Dylan in order to discover some secrets about the legend itself. And so he invented the term garbology, and then from there he invented a new one called Dylanology. But, you know, with the time, as the years went by, Dylanology became quite a prestigious and, dignified form of interpreting Bob Dylan's lyrics.
I love it. Garbology. This guy, he was stealing Dylan's garbage, and who else? He had some other celebrities he was stalking, didn't he?
Yeah, other former FBI director Edgar Hoover.
Uh-huh.
Went through the garbage of other famous people, and I find it disgusting personally, but it's not a bad way to discover the innermost secrets of people, because, you know, you are what you throw away. So,
sure.
You know, if you suffer from diabetes, I will find maybe some insulin in your garden. Or if you are drunk, I will find bottles of Jack Daniels. So, you know, that's a good method to find out about people.
Did he find some?
That's what he was doing.
Did he find some good stuff in Dylan's garbage?
What I know is that he found a letter Dylan had written. He says, because, you know, we have to trust A.J. Weberman.
Uh-huh.
He found a letter that Dylan had written and then torn apart and ripped up pieces to John Cash. And and at the time, maybe that was maybe unpopular in certain circles, because Dylan, I think all these definitions are wrong, but Dylan was so defined as left-wing, and Johnny Cash was defined as right-wing, so that could have put Dylan in a more awkward situation. But I don't think that's the case at all, because when Dylan went electric, Johnny Cash was one of the people who said, who somehow supported Dylan in his new decision. So, and as a matter of fact, they ended up playing together one of Dylan's albums. So, you know, there was a mutual respect and recognition.
And if we read your book, Marco, we'll find out that we're not really sure where Bob Dylan stands politically, or maybe we are, or maybe we're not. And I'm wondering, how did you become a Dylanologist? Do you remember the first time you heard his music?
Yeah, I remember it very well, because I was 14 and I was on a short trip to London. I went to Carnaby Street and I bought a Dylan album, live album called At Budokan.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't speak any English at the time. So I just bought his record, and I remember listening to the first two songs. The first was Mr. Tambourine Man, and the second was Shelter from the Storm. I got hooked. I said, here's the sound I'm looking for. This is the voice I'm looking for. And I really want to understand what this guy is saying. And, being an analogy in a way changed my life because he gave me the input and the drive to learn to speak English. And today, even though I'm not a mother tongue speaker, my English is good and I actually teach in my life. So, I owe Dylan a career.
Mm. My guest is Marco Zappas. His book is Bob Knows, Conversations with Dylanologists. Tell us how you got the idea for the book and about the people that you decided to interview.
How I got the idea. It was a fluke, really. Happiness. It was, what you used to call synchronicity or serendipity. It was, I had read a wonderful book, which is called Why Bob Dylan Matters, by Richard Thomas, who is one of the most authoritative Dylanologists. He teaches at Harvard, teaches the classics. And I love the book, and I wrote a very positive review for an online Italian magazine that worked as a hobby. And then I said to myself, I'm gonna send this his review to Richard Thomas. Maybe he will read it. Maybe he'll be happy. And what happened was that 2 hours afterwards, he replied to me and said, "I'm wrong. He wants me." He was very happy to read my article. And so there I was the day afterwards, talking via Veneto, one of the places that La Dolce Vita, Fellini's Dolce Vita, made famous. And it also quoted La Dolce Vita in a Dylan song called, I'm not very good with song titles, but Motorcycle Accident or something like that. And so I was talking with Richard, and I guess we liked each other. And so after that meeting, we kept exchanging emails concerning Dylan. And then one day I asked him, could I interview you? And they said, sure, go ahead. And after we did our conversation together, he said to me, you should also contact Andrew Muir, who is one of the most highly estimated Dylanologist in England, and he wrote 3 books about Dylan. One of them, he makes a very interesting parallelism with Shakespeare. So then I interviewed Muir, and then I was on a roll. I'm actually better at asking questions than answering them. But so I decided to continue, and then I arrived to Aubrey Glaser, the rabbi of the Dayton Synagogue. I'll be visiting soon in March, and other people as well.
You let the cat out of the bag. That was my big surprise, Marco, is that one of your Dylanologists lives right here in Dayton, Ohio, and he's going to be bringing you to the area for an event, and that is Rabbi Aubrey Glaser over at Beth Abraham Synagogue in Dayton, and you're going to be in town on Monday, March 25th, for an event at the synagogue from noon until 1 o'clock. That's at 305 Sugar Camp Circle in, actually, Oakwood, I believe. And this is it's a free event, but you need to register to attend. So if you go to the website, Beth Abraham Dayton, that is how you will be able to register. BethAbrahamDayton.com, .org. That's BethAbrahamDayton.org, and you'll be able to register. And they'll also be Zooming this, and I imagine they'll have the Zoom information there on the website as well. So you're flying all the way from Rome, Italy, to talk about Bob Dylan with Rav Aubrey Glaser. Tell us about him. He's written about Dylan, and I love these interviews you did with him.
Can I just say something, and then we'll get back to Aubrey Glaser, who is amazing. He's an amazing scholar. You said I'm flying all the way to America, not only to be at the synagogue on Monday, and I'm very glad you gave all the information, I'll be also having a similar conversation with Grady Herron the day afterwards at the Xavier University in Cincinnati.
Oh.
Can I just give quickly the information? It will be in the Clock Tower Lounge in the Gallagher Student Center at 4 p.m. on Tuesday, the 26th of March, with another great Dylan scholar. And then the following day, which is March the 27th, I'll be discussing Dylan with Richard Thomas, whom I mentioned earlier, at Harvard University. So
oh.
It's going to be a small, very intense tour. I'm going to sleep four nights in the United States and then fly back to Rome. So that's going to be amazing. And I loved exchanging views with Aubrey. He opened my perception of Dylan, and he has a lot to say about Dylan's conversion to Christianity, his interpretation of that, and also maybe you want to ask me other questions, but there's a very important definition that Aubrey coined, which is the definition of intuitive Kabbalist.
Intuitive Kabbalist. And he talks about Gnosticism, and you're listening to 91.3 WYSO, connecting our community through news, music, and storytelling on the air and online. And Marco Zappas is my guest on the program this morning, and he joins us on the telephone in Rome, Italy. If you just tuned in and you're thinking, the sound is a little muddy, a little murky, well, Marco is on the phone thousands of miles away. And it's a cell phone, and cell phones aren't the greatest if you're 5 miles away. So the sound quality is getting stretched out a little bit. We're doing the best we can with the audio, and we know you expect great audio on this program. We give you the best that we can at all times. And we'll continue my conversation with Marco right after this. I've been joined on the telephone by Marco Zappas. The book is Bob Knows, Conversations with Dylanologists. My favorite quote in the book is from your second interview with Aubrey. And he sent his book to a scholar, an eminent scholar. In fact, this guy has been on my show a couple of times. He died a few years ago. And he gave the book, and the scholar said, "I have no interest in the music of Bobby Dylan nor his writing, so good luck and blessings to you, but I couldn't really care less about Dylan." That was Harold Bloom. That sounds just like him.
Very, very snobbish, right? Very elitist in a way. I think the scholar was Bloom or something.
Harold Bloom. Yes, Harold Bloom.
Yes. Yeah. And okay. This guy, yes, he did not care about it. But this guy, together with Gerson Scholem, who was another scholar who wrote a very important book on the so-called false messiah called Sabbatai Zvi or Terry, I don't know, there are many pronunciations of the name. And together also with another philosopher, important philosopher called Adorno, they were wondering somehow if after the end of the movement called Hasidism, there was still a possibility of serious intuition in the Jewish thinking when it came to the Kabbalah. And they came to the conclusion that maybe not, but there could be something called, defined as intuitive Kabbalist. And so it was their definition, but what I find fascinating is that Aubrey Glaser, in his two books, written on Dylan and on Leonard Cohen, because he's also an expert on Cohen. And in a conference he gave on Stanley Kubrick, the famous film director, he came to the conclusion, and this is what he told me during the conversation we had together, that we could say that nowadays people like Bob Dylan or Leonard Cohen or Stanley Kubrick could be considered as intuitive Kabbalists, meaning that they are not institutionalized. They are free thinkers, but somehow, thanks to their imagination and their genius, in a way, they come to conclusions that can be reached through the study of the Kabbalah. I hope I gave a good summary because I'm not a Kabbalah expert myself.
Okay. My guest is Marco Zappas. And again, he will be at Beth Abraham Synagogue at noon on Monday, March 25th, in conversation with Rav Aubrey Glazer. They'll be talking about all things Bob Dylan. Bob knows, conversations with Dylanologists. Now, please explain, because some people out there are probably kind of baffled, why you consider, and a lot of these Dylanologists consider him to be the great poet of our time. Why is this?
This is a $1 million question. I've never asked myself this question because I always taken it for granted that rock lyrics are poetry. I think in Hebrew there is only one word and it means both poem and song. The word is shir or shira.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always been my approach. And the point is that rock music definitely changed our society. And now young people are listening to different type of music, but all these genealogists, maybe they, like me, they were born in the 1960s or 50s or a bit later. So at the time, rock really was the form of art that spoke to the people and described the type of experiences we were going through. And the artist who can really convey his messages better than the others, better than the Rolling Stones or the Beatles or punk music, or is certainly Dylan. And so I mean, it's just an opinion, of course, it's debatable, but I think Dylan belongs to the sphere of, I don't know, in Italy we had Leonardo da Vinci or Michelangelo or Dante Alighieri or Shakespeare in another country, or Aeschylus or Sophocles in ancient Greece. This is the kind of level and quality and density of content and meaning that he can reach in his music. And I have also another conviction that there will be maybe the fourth, the fifth, the sixth world war in the world. And then they will try to understand how we used to live, what our life was like. And in order to understand that, people will listen to rock music and to Dylan's lyrics, just to have an idea of what the world is nowadays, it's day and age. I don't know if I explain my thinking properly, but it's a difficult question.
Okay. Marco Zappas joins us. He interviewed all these Dylanologists, and there's one person that you interviewed who you don't consider to be a Dylanologist, but she's pretty special. Tell us why.
Well, yes. Brittany Shane. She's been very, very nice to me, and she accepted to be interviewed, but what really happened to her, she's an artist. She's been a singer, a musician, and an actress. And she met Dylan. And then she started hanging out with him, with the circle. And at a certain point, if my memory serves me well, the road manager got ill or disappeared or something, and for a while she became a surrogate manager, so she got to know him quite deeply. And they even had a short-lived romantic affair, which, I don't know, Rita Lee, Shane doesn't know exactly, maybe she does, but she didn't tell me what it meant to Dylan, but it meant a lot to her. And like when you fly too close to the gods, like I think it was a myth of pickle, that his wings melted because they were made of wax. And she suffered the consequences and the repercussions of her intimacy with Dylan, and she had some difficult years afterwards. So she's telling in the book and in the interview, the exchange, she's telling us about the good times and the bad times. But, you know, what's interesting about her is that she gives a different insight into Dylan's personality. It's probably less intellectual than in other cases.
My guest is Marco Zappas, and the book is Bob Knows, Conversations with Dylanologists. You ask really great questions. I was very impressed by the depth and the intellect in these questions and responses from your guests. And in the section with Julio Pantelet, David Lynch, and Bob Dylan, you talk a lot about the music of the period and the so-called British invasion. You're clearly very well prepared to do these interviews. And you just did an event with Julio. Tell our listeners about it, because this sounds pretty wild.
It was wild. It was totally unexpected. What happened is that a lady I know who works at the European Union in Brussels read my book, and she said, you know, that there's a way you can get invited there and present your book at the European Parliament. So we followed the procedure, and Giulio Pantelet and I ended up being invited in Brussels last Thursday, actually. It was the 22nd of February. And so we were there to present my book, Bob Knows. And in Giulio Pantelet, he's a musician, he's the leader of a band called Panta. So what we did, it was incredible. We performed snippets of Like a Rolling Stone in the media center, which is where you find everybody going from one room to another at the European Parliament. So Giulio performed the song. The video is available on YouTube. I think it's amazing. And people were very interested. They stopped. They were filming us, and then they started asking questions. And then we went to give our little conference talk. And it's been an amazing experience being at the European Parliament to talk about Dylan and to listen to Dylan.
There's quite a bit of information in your book about Bob Dylan's connection to film. And you yourself are very much into the work of David Lynch. We learn a lot about you and about film in this book.
Yeah, thanks. David Lynch. David Lynch, I wrote a book about not really David Lynch. I wrote a book about the TV series Twin Peaks that he made together with Mark Frost.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened because I had already written a book about Dylan in Italian. And then all these controversies started, whether a musician should be called a poet or not. And the journalist asked me to write a book, and we wrote it together, called, I'm translating from Italian, From Homer to Rock, trying to justify the fact that always big literature has been accompanied by music. But so even in that book, I was still talking about Dylan, and I wanted to start feeling like an addiction. So I wanted to write about something else. And a TV series I had loved was Twin Peaks. So because like in Dylan's songs, there are different layers of meaning, and so you can explore and give different interpretations. Unfortunately, the more I was writing about David Lynch, the more the topic of Dylan kept cropping up again. Somehow I was not, I didn't kick the habit in a way. So, and I started noticing some similarities between Dylan and Lynch, which then Giulio Pantalei in our interview explores further, because Giulio Pantalei had a special chance of meeting David Lynch in person. But what I mean, you know, I just give you a hint of what I was writing about. It's electricity. Electricity has is paramount in Lynch's production. But, you know, electricity is very important in Dylan's career as well, because he went to that, and that was an amazing step. He made many enemies. And I don't know why. I keep thinking that's my own interpretation, and, you know, take it with a grain of salt, take it with moderation. I'm using an Italian expression. I don't know if it works in English. But I think that the song Visions of Joanna, when he mentions the ghost of electricity, is about himself feeling this urge to go electric and the urge for his conscience to explode. But the people around me, around him, they don't like him. I think it is a more vitriolic invective against the somehow the conservative part of the folk community that wants him not to go electric more than positively for free. And, you know, he talks about these people bragging of their misery and, you know, calling him Judas and things like that because they don't want him to evolve. But I think Dylan made the right thing.
Well, it was the Newport Folk Festival, and a lot of these old folkies didn't like the electric, but it really changed the music world, didn't it?
I think it did. You know, I mean, Dylan had written masterpieces before going electric. Just let's think about Hard Rain is Gonna Fall, Don't Think Twice, It's Alright, Blowing the Wind, etc. But to me, to my personal liking, Dylan became Dylan when he went electric. And that also maybe partly answers the difficult question you asked me before, that, you know, when they gave him the Nobel Prize, it's the understanding that Dylan belongs to a tradition, you know, and the tradition is that of the bluesman before him, and then from blues you have rock music, and there is a path, there is a river that flows, and it has a certain, and it follows certain direction, and it was inevitable to turn electric, to develop a new sound. Without that sound, Dylan wouldn't have been able even to have his Christian faith when he started playing gospel with female backing vocals and so on. So, you know, there was no escape, in my opinion, from that decision.
My guest is Marco Zappas, and his book is Bob Knows, Conversations with Dylanologists. He joins us from very far away. He's on the phone in Rome, Italy. That's why the sound is the way it is on his phone, because he's a long ways away, thousands and thousands of miles. But he will be here at the end of the month of March. On Monday, March 25th at 12 noon, he will make an appearance at Beth Abraham Synagogue in Dayton, 305 Sugar Camp Circle. and he will be joined by Rav Aubrey Glazer from Beth Abraham, who is one of the Dylanologists he interviewed in this book, and they'll be talking about Bob Dylan. And it's free, but you need to register to attend, and you can go to BethAbrahamDayton.org to do that. They will also be doing it by Zoom if you want to watch it remotely, and I believe that information will be there on the website. That's Monday, March 25th at 12 noon. And if you want to Zoom that discussion between Marco and Rav Aubrey Glazer on March 25th, that information is available on the synagogue's website. We'll continue my conversation with Marco right after this. You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. My guest today is Marco Zappas, and he joins us on the telephone in Rome, Italy, and that is a long ways away. And we're getting the best sound we can out of this conversation, and we appreciate your forbearance and understanding of some of the sound issues that we're dealing with, because Marco is thousands of miles away talking to us about his book, Bob Knows, Conversations with Dylanologists. It's all Bob Dylan. Marco, there's so much information in here. My mind was boggled by all this information, and a lot of it was just like amazing trivia. And I agree with so much of the stuff that I read in the book. Like you observe in one of your very long and deep questions how the invasion, the British invasion with bands like the Rolling Stones, they were really instrumental in having us recognize our own music over here, our blues music, which really wasn't appreciated very much until the Stones started playing blues covers.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the Stones, they achieved a miracle. I think they had the brilliant intuition. I mean, they led a sort of monastic life, learning the blues, and and they learned all the insides out of the blues. But the greatest intuition was to understand that that type of music would go mainstream, and it actually happened. So even black musicians, African American musicians like Buddy Guy, for instance, they recognized that without the Rolling Stones, the bluesmen and the blues musicians themselves, the blues women, would not have achieved the recognition and they have today. And that was due to a bunch of foreigners coming from England. Mm. And what's interesting is then the dynamics that begins between Dylan and the Stones, because I think they have a sort of love-hate relationship. In one of his songs, he calls them British bad boys, because Dylan understood and appreciated certainly what the Rolling Stones were doing, but then he was also thinking, I mean, this is American music. It belongs to us, to our roots. And I think the concept behind the title of bringing it all back home is to say, now the blues, okay, you are taking advantages, but you're writing cover songs, and the blues belongs to us. And the blues there's a song many people love, even though it hadn't been released at the time it was composed, which is Blind Willie McTell. And it's an amazing song. I think, like in all his masterpieces, there are different layers of interpretation. But one interpretation is that he goes through the history of America and slavery ships, the Indians, and so on. And while he's making these magnificent descriptions of what the history of America was all about, he shows his humility and he says, nobody can sing this thing like Blind Willie McTell. Mm. And the amazing thing he's doing is that please accept my ignorance, but before listening to Dylan Sunday, I didn't know who Blind Willie McPhail was. So he's giving authority to a musician who, without Dylan Song, would probably have remained quite unknown.
I think of him as having a social conscience. I know there's some conversation in your book about how you can interpret his lyrics as being ambiguous and you're not sure what side he's actually on, but it was pretty clear when he wrote about an incarcerated inmate who was falsely charged with murder, that this was a very powerful thing, and it really made a difference in the world.
Yeah, it does. It does. You're right. You're right. And I actually tried to make this point at the European Parliament because I was speaking in front of a few politicians, you know, that, I mean, Dylan Over has strong political implications. In 1963, I remember well when there was when Martin Luther King gave the most wonderful political speech ever given in the world, I Have a Dream, Dylan was there performing his song. And then later on, in the 70s, when a boxer called Hurricane had been sentenced to prison for a crime he did not commit, Dylan was there, and he supported the cause of liberty against racism. You know, Black Lives Matter, when Black Lives Matter did not exist yet, he had already invented. And there are a few lines that I love, taken from a song from Dylan's latest album, Rough and Rowdy Ways, and it's, the song is called False Prophet, and Dylan says, I'm the enemy of strife, I'm the enemy of the unlived, meaningless life. And I think his songs, this is the way I interpret it, least are a message to us to get our act together and do something, you know. So as you said, he's got a social conscience, and not only that, he's the enemy of the unlived life. You know, you have to create yourself, and you know I know my limitations, but for me they're an invitation to do something within my small circle or in my personal life. And as I said before, listening to him was an invitation to learn to speak English. And now this book for me is an invitation to, you know, it took me places. I went to Brussels, and now I'm coming to the States, so, which is, I can't do much more than that, but there is a practical, wonderful reverberation or effect in your personal life that comes from.
My guest is Marco Zappas, and his book is Bob Knows, Conversations with Dylanologists. Again, he'll be in Dayton on Monday, March 25th at noon at Beth Abraham Synagogue, and it is free, but to attend, you need to register. So you can go to their website at bethabrahamdayton.org. That's at 305 Sugar Camp Circle in Dayton. And they're going to be Zooming it as well, and that information should be on the website. Did you imply that False Prophet might be about Donald Trump?
No, I don't go that far.
No. Okay.
I never thought that, so I don't see. I didn't know where to find this this kind of connection. False Prophet could be about the former Pope Benedict the 16th, Pope Ratzinger.
Ratzinger, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because when Dylan was invited to perform in front of Pope, John Paul II, the Polish Pope, Ratzinger, who was his right-hand man, was opposed to this decision, and I think he even defined Dylan as a false prophet, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan, in his song, he might be making the point that why are you implying these things about? But I find it difficult to believe that his songs are about a particular person. This is why they will last forever, because they can apply to more to mythical figures or to general public personas rather than a single individual.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I live in Italy, but I'm not a Trump supporter, I don't see that really. Maybe you do, but I'm open to listening to other views. You know?
Okay.
Do you think it is the case? Or
yeah. Well, I was just curious. I'm not a Bob Dylanologist like you are. So I've enjoyed his music over the years. I can remember the first time I bought one of his records. I loved his early albums. I loved Blonde on Blonde. There's albums that stand out in my mind where I just go, I really liked that record. And I haven't been able to keep track of him all these years. And I'm wondering, when you Dylanologists know that he has a new album finally coming out, what is that like? Do you like rush to like listen to it and analyze the lyrics and check it out and play it a million times?
Well, sounds like an ordeal, you know. Oh my God, a new album! So now I study. Dylan, if I remember well, he did it gradually, and he did it during a particular period during COVID. So he, first of all, he came out with this very long song called "Mother Most Foul," and then 18-minute song dedicated to the assassination of President Kennedy, but as well to the treasures hidden in American music. And it's a slow song, and somehow it was perfect for the mood we were all going through during the COVID pandemic. And then he released a few more songs. The way I try to go into the lyrics afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
I try to enjoy the music first. I don't write about music simply because I'm not a musician. So whatever I could write about, it would be banal and wishy-washy.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't mean that I don't appreciate music. That's the first thing I love, you know. The voice, it's the instrument, and so on. And the words start seeping in somehow. They start penetrating you and going down your skin and reaching other levels. And then it reaches the point that you really start quoting them, you know, like maybe in America it's still that way, but in Italy in the Middle Ages in later periods, people would quote the Holy Scripture by heart.
Uh-huh.
And then say, you know, what would Jesus have done in his circumstance or the Holy Apostles, whatever. And I know it's stupid, but when I am facing a situation, there's always some part of Dylan or Leonard Cohen's or Rolling Stones lyrics that come to my mind, and I play with them. Then doesn't mean that I make the right decision afterwards, but it's become part of my lexicon, ingrained somehow deep inside me. But it's not that an album comes out and I think, oh my God, now I have to start. No, first I enjoy
You just mentioned John F. Kennedy, and in the book we learned that Dylan apparently has a fascination with the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and according to one of your interviewees, Dylan thinks maybe there was a second person involved besides Lee Harvey Oswald. When I think about Bob Dylan connected to Kennedy, I think about the song he put out in 1963 about the Cuban Missile Crisis and when John F. Kennedy was president and we came within minutes of nuclear war with Russia. And I was reading a book the other day, I was reading a novel, and the writer wrote that this character was in the house listening to that song that he wrote about the Cuban Missile Crisis, but the year was 1961. And I'm like, no, that didn't come out until 1963. I was like, and I don't even know his discography, but I just knew that was a mistake. I was like, no, that's wrong.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Kennedy, yes, you're right. Dylan, I mean, you know, sometimes everybody talks about conspiracy theories now and nowadays, and if they ask me, do you believe in conspiracy theories, my rational reply would say no, but sometimes I do. And the John Kennedy assassination is one of those examples where not everything is clear. And to my understanding, Dylan is not totally convinced by the official version. But then, you know, you're mentioning the Cuban crisis, the attempted invasion. I mean, something that's amazing, that amazes me all the time, is that Leonard Cohen was there when all these things were happening. He was in Cuba. What was he doing there? I don't know. There's a song called where he mocks himself. It's called Field Commander Cohen or something like that, where he portrays himself as a secret agent catapulted into Cuba, serving acid at diplomatic cocktail parties or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's a huge topic. But there's one, I remember another of my interviewees called Stephen Arnoff, and he's the president or director of a yeshiva in Jerusalem. He has some profound intuition about murder of power, because he says that songs begin with a portrayal of the Kennedy assassination, but then it ends up name-checking and paying profound tribute and homage to the great singers and the great musicians of America, mostly, some are English as well. And then Stephen Arnoff comes to the conclusion in the book, and he says, and I think that's a profound message, because in front of the atrocities of the world, sometimes we have no other solution just to keep singing. And this is what maybe Dylan is inviting us to do, you know, look at the bright side, maybe.
Well, Marco, it's so wonderful to talk to you, and we really appreciate you calling in all the way from Rome, Italy.
Yeah, me too. It's a real pleasure.
My guest has been Marco Zappas, and his book is Bob Knows, Conversations with Dylanologists. And you can meet Marco on Monday, March 25th. He will be in conversation with Rav Aubrey Glazer at Beth Abraham Synagogue in Dayton. And that will be from 12 noon until 1 o'clock Monday, March 25th at 305 Sugar Camp Circle. If you're into Dylan, you might want to check this out. And it'll also be Zoomed, and it's free, but you need to register to attend or to go to the Zoom, I guess. And just go to their website at bethabrahamdayton.org. And as Marco mentioned, he's got some other events in our area. And Marco, it's just such a treat to talk to you. Thank you so much for talking to us about Bob.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. And I want also to thank the people who have been listening to us. And see you soon.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.